Sorry, I'm a little bit late. I just had to reinstall my viewer. Okay, gotta get the audio set up. This one should come from null. This one should come. Okay. So now we should have voice on both channels. Set up my seat. Okay, so good evening, everyone. I'm broadcasting live. This is actually the time when I normally broadcast on the internet anyway, so there should be some people listening in at meditation.sirimangalo.org. So today, I understand, is the Chinese New Year celebration. Has anyone been taking part in the Second Life stuff that's been happening around today? Is that what's going on today? Been activities going on all day. Some talks earlier. You're good. Is my audio okay? Last time I saw that it was turning red. I don't want it too loud. Let me know if it's too loud. You shouldn't ever see the red. Well, I don't celebrate Chinese New Year, to put a damper on things. Honestly, I'm kind of confused by all the New Years. It makes your head spin. I know there's the one I grew up with. It's the one we have on January 1st. It's because I grew up with a Christian calendar. It's not even really Christian, maybe it's a Roman calendar. And so we have an arbitrary New Year. Then there's in South Asia and Southeast Asia, they have a New Year in April. So I'll actually probably have to get involved with that. And with the Cambodian community here. And now we have a third New Year that I have to think about. What's with all these New Years? Be grumpy for a second. So we, but Buddhist holidays are kind of like that in the sense that they're just excuses. So our birthday is an excuse to do good deeds. We have these yearly reminders of our mortality. There are standard Buddhist holidays that actually have more meaning, and as a result, are not just excuses. They're excuses to remember important things, like the day of the Buddha's enlightenment, the day of his first discourse. The day of entering into the rains has a different significance. So we really have the entering into the rains, which for both monks and lay peoples in Buddhist society has meaning. Then you have the exiting of the rains, the ending of the rains. But New Year, well, not so much. It's just arbitrary, right? On the other hand, the idea of cycles is important. It's important that we count in some way, to be able to measure, to be able to compare time. So a year is as good a measure as any. Boy, a whole year has gone by since the last New Year celebration, that kind of thing. So for that reason, because it's a counting thing, it's traditionally become a time for making determinations, right? New Year's resolutions. In Chinese tradition, it's a time for remembering your ancestors, which of course doesn't really have anything to do with Buddhism. It's much more Confucianism and just general folk religion. But they even do it in Thailand. People who have Chinese background, or even the Thais, I think, have picked it up. They burn stuff. If you don't know the tradition, they burn stuff. They burn money, they burn houses, they burn food, they burn clothes. They burn shoes. Burn just about everything. But they burn effigies, they burn representations. It's a big thing in India at the time of the Buddha as well, they used to burn stuff. Agni was the god of fire. And so burning things has always been symbolic for us as humans. You know? The flame. And so the Buddha talked about flames. He said, you want to know the truth about fire? We talk about the cleansing fire, we talk about the god of fire. The Chinese tradition is somehow that if you burn it, it gets to the person who's died, because you've burnt the person who's died, I guess. When you burn stuff, it gets to them. It's not Buddhist. It doesn't make any sense from the point of view of Buddhism, because you're not burning real stuff, you're not sacrificing anything, you're not giving anything. The way Buddhism looks at things is much different. So, in that tradition, we should comment on this Chinese tradition the way Buddha would comment on the Indian tradition. So the Buddha went, after he became enlightened, he walked from Varanasi to, well, basically to Rajgaha. But before he went to Rajgaha, about 120 kilometers or something. 120 kilometers? No, it's further than that. I don't know why I have 120. It's a long distance. And in India, yeah, well, it's a long way to walk. Yeah, but before he went to Rajgaha, he had to find someone to give him legitimacy. provide him with legitimacy he would need to make his case to ordinary people. And so at the time there was a group of ascetics, three groups of ascetics, three brothers with their followings, living along a river. I guess there used to be a river flowing through Rajagaha. I'm not sure if I've seen it. 2,500 years ago, probably a different river. And they all worship fire. That's kind of apropos here. They, on the topic of fire, they have these fire worshippers. And so the Buddha said to them, all is on fire. He spent some time convincing them first with his magical powers, but eventually he led them to a spot, Gaya Sisa, which is, I guess, the top of a mountain or a hill near Rajagaha. In Gaya, I guess. Which is, oh wait, where is Gaya? Not actually that close to Rajagaha. Anyway, somewhere around there. And he taught them the Adita Pariyaya Sutta. Adita means on fire or hot. So it's the exposition on fire, the exposition on burning. How to burn, or all about burning. And so he starts by saying, Sabang Bhikkhave Adita. All is on fire for those of you who see the dangers of samsara. You should know this, that all is on fire. Everything is on fire. And what do I mean by everything? Well, the eye is on fire. Sights are on fire. The feelings which come from sights, these are on fire. Consciousness of seeing is on fire. And sounds, the same with sounds. Sounds are on fire. The ear is on fire. And the nose is on fire. Smells are on fire. Consciousness of smelling is on fire. The tongue is on fire. So basically the six senses, the internal base, the external base, and the consciousness, the experience of it. Even the mind is on fire, and thoughts are on fire, and the mind consciousness is on fire, consciousness of thoughts even. And so if you're wondering, well, what does he mean by this? Yeah, then he says, what are they on fire with? So this method of, this is a common method of the Buddha. He asks a question and he answers it. And it's a very clear method of discourse. Kena aditam, with what are they on fire? Aditam. Raga gina dosa gina moha gina. Raga agi is fire again, so raga means passion or lust. Dosa gina, with a fire of anger. Moha gina, with a fire of delusion. Aditang jatiya jaraya marana yanena sokehi paridevi. Domana Sehi, Upaya Sehi, Aditanti Vadami. So they're on fire with defilements, but they're also on fire with suffering. So Jatiya, Jarati, these are all the types of suffering. Birth is suffering, old age is suffering, death is suffering. So this is what they're on fire with. Because they are caught up in samsara. They're caught up in this perpetual cycle of dissatisfaction and of the obsession and pursuit of satisfaction, which is never realized, never attained. So this is the way the Buddha would approach fire ritual, and this is probably an important or a good way of responding or commenting on the rituals of Chinese New Year. Talking about fire. Yeah, it's not actually that related. One other thing that we should say about these sorts of things, because often our rituals are considered to be good. Rituals are considered to be positive, beneficial, wholesome. So you burn stuff for your ancestors, and that's supposed to be, wholesome, good. And the idea here is that somehow these things get to they benefit the people who they're designated for. So your ancestors, wherever they are, will benefit from you burning stuff for them. It's curious. I mean, this kind of thing happens all over the world. You know, you burn a sacrifice for God. These were big things. The angels wanted us to burn sacrifices, ancient times. If you read the Torah, the holy book of the Jewish people, apparently God liked them to burn stuff. So they would burn stuff, and somehow it got to God. Well, he liked the smell, maybe, I don't know. But fire was a big thing. But this idea that somehow you could perform a sacrifice and that would benefit this person. We do it in Buddhism as well. It's a common thing we do it towards the Buddha a lot, right? Like we burn candles and flowers, we burn incense, light candles, and put flowers in front of the Buddha. And the Buddha, I don't know that I can remember a point where the Buddha said that's a good thing. I imagine he did. If you look closely, you could find where he said, oh yes, it's meritorious or something. But probably more in passing. The most famous point is where he actually addressed this. He said, well, this isn't how you rightly worship the Buddha, but we do it anyway, and we've gone, in many instances we've gone kind of crazy about it. People will we're just talking about this today, funny enough, on Chinese New Year, if that's what today is. I was having lunch with a Chinese monk, which isn't something I do every day, but he just happened to come this morning. We went out for lunch, and he was showing me pictures of how they offer 24 sets of food. I asked him what the 24 was, can't remember now what it was. I don't know if he ever told me. But in Sri Lankan tradition, they offer 28 sets to 28 Buddhas. So we have this list of 28 Buddhas that's in one chant, and that over time have taught Buddhism. Somehow, I don't know, could be just made up, but it's a list of 28. Where it comes from, don't really know. But they give these extravagant offerings, and I was telling him how one of the most troubling aspects of it is that they throw out everything they give afterwards. So I was watching them put together these sets of drinks, three different big glasses of juice, 28 sets, and then at the end they throw the juice away. As they say, we can't drink it once it's given to the Buddha, and they do this with food as well, so big, extravagant extravagant offering of food to the Buddha. And then they short out. I'm not convinced that this is... I mean, I've talked about it, but I don't want to go into too much detail. But my overarching point is that this isn't really how goodness works in Buddhism. In Buddhism, goodness is doing a good deed and dedicating it to whatever you like. You know, using the power of the goodness. There's power in goodness, but it has to be goodness. Putting food in front of a statue... I get it. There's faith and there's confidence and there's... you know, it's just... You're not really benefiting a statue by putting food in front of it. I mean, it's not goodness in the same way as giving food to a beggar is. Or giving food to a monk or a religious teacher is. Right? If you feed someone who is teaching good things... Sorry, I mean, I'm not hinting at anything. but this is the thing, is people would give food in the old days and even now in Buddhist countries. They would give food to religious leaders, and that's clearly good, because you're providing life to that person. You know that you are directly supporting good things. You're directly influencing the future. Giving to a statue, you'd have to argue it's a different type of goodness, but it borders on blind ritual. Because there's some idea that by doing this, some goodness comes of it, and that's not really how Buddhism works. Goodness comes from goodness. You know, is it actually a good thing that you're doing? Putting juice in front of a statue? Putting food in front of a statue? I get that there's some goodness there. You have faith, as I said, and confidence. Anyway, that's how Buddhists do it, and some people will argue very fiercely that it is a good deed to do that. So, to each their own. But it points to this, you know, this idea of ritual that we have now on Chinese New Year, where we burn stuff. And so an actual Buddhist ceremony wouldn't be to burn stuff hoping that it gets to the people you love. Though you could argue that, you know, your good thoughts, the fact that you are wishing them well, yeah, there's something there for sure. It's a way of clearing your thoughts and thinking good thoughts about that person, respecting them, revering them. It's a symbolic gesture. That's probably how they explain it these days, otherwise it would be kind of ridiculous. But there is a way that your goodness can reach the deceased. And that's by dedicating actual good deeds. Like if you compare burning fake money, fake gold, to actually taking money and doing good things with it, and then saying, you know, this is out of respect for that person, you know, I do this on behalf of that person, or those people. That's something that actually has fruit. It has fruit in many ways, but most importantly, it just has the power of the goodness. It gives you the power to determine in your mind the results or the direction that you let that deed take you. So it doesn't just work for deceased relatives. If you give charity and then you make a vow through this gift, may I progress on the spiritual path. I mean, that kind of thing. Just because goodness has a powerful quality to it. It empowers you. Gives you confidence as a good person. It takes away your guilt. Takes away your stinginess, your greed. Doing good deeds improves your mental capacity. That's the idea behind it. So, I mean, this hopefully is somehow interesting to all of you. It's not entirely what I had in mind to talk about today. I did want to talk about the idea of. Just briefly to point out that with all these rituals or with all these celebrations. We shouldn't just make it about, we shouldn't just make the new be about the year. Right, so as I said, this is a way of counting. We count years. And so, okay, the old year's gone and the new year's here. But what is actually new? This is the point. Is that, are you the same old person with all the same old problems? Because we're counting for a reason. So are we just counting 1 year of our life gone that we'll never get back? Are we counting 1 year closer to death? Or are we just slaves to the stars or to the sun, worshipping the sun? Oh, we've gone around the sun one more time. Or is it just for fun? I think oftentimes it's just an excuse to celebrate. If you go to China, if you go to countries that celebrate these things, for many people it's just an excuse to get drunk. So that's what we do here on New Year's Eve, right? But no, new should mean something. If you want to have a happy New Year, then you yourself should embody the newness. Something new. It's an excuse, it's a good excuse. Something we should do on our birthday. It's also something we should do in the New Year. When we have the New Year, let's make something new of ourselves. And that's why we make these resolutions. But when you wish everyone a happy New Year, many of you have probably heard me, some of you have probably heard me give this talk before, but there are four things that you should keep in mind that we should wish each other. These four things are what the Buddha said brings well-being. And they're appropriate for the new year because this is what we wish for the new year. This is what we want to change. And to find a point where we can say, I'm going to be different this year. I'm going to do something this year. So, it's an excuse to actually find a new way. So these four things are wisdom, effort, self-restraint, or composure, and renunciation. So for the actual New Year, I did a, before the New Year, but just a few days before the New Year, this year, I did a guided meditation with these four. So I'd like to guide you guys through this. We'll do a quick one. I won't take too much time. But if you want to look up the full one, you can look up New Year's Meditations or something. It's a really good talk. I found it worked really well. I don't have to toot my own horn, but some talks I think I do are kind of bland. This one I think was pretty good. It was much more guided meditation. So let's go through them now. The first, so close your eyes, start meditating, turn off Facebook, stop taking pictures. Not that the pictures are unwelcome, but at this point let's switch to meditation mode. Close your eyes. And we start with wisdom. Wisdom starts by seeing what is. So you close your eyes and say, what am I looking at? What am I looking for? When you close your eyes, there's many ways of looking. Right? You can focus on love. You can focus on death. You can focus on the Buddha. But for wisdom, we're going to focus on reality. We're going to focus on the experiences, our experiences themselves. So we have to start by breaking reality up into components. You have to start recognizing the things that you're experiencing. And you close your eyes, you can't do that immediately. You close your eyes and it's not clear, what am I looking at? What is it? I need direction. The Buddha provided this direction, and I don't think everyone knows this who practices Buddhism. He talked about mindfulness, and people know that, but he also talked about something called the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, and these are important. They're from the Buddha himself, so you should take them as a very useful tool in making sense of what we're experiencing. The Four Foundations of Mindfulness, Satipatthana, are the body. This is all of our movements and all of the sensations in the body. Our feelings of pain or pleasure and calm. Our thoughts, so good thoughts, bad thoughts, past thoughts, future thoughts. And the Dhammas. So the Dhammas are a whole bunch of stuff that really encapsulates the path that we have to follow to become free from suffering. But these four give us a good guide. The fourth one's sort of open-ended, or it leads you to the goal. So we'll talk about that. Just briefly, we don't have much time. So we start with the body. Normally I teach people to focus on the stomach because it's part of the body that you're always going to experience because it's affected by the breath. So when it rises, we say rise. And when it falls, we say fall. Not out loud, just in your mind, say to yourself, rise and fall. And that gets you to start to recognize the body. And you can just say to yourself, sitting. So lots of different meditations use mantras. The mantra here we're using is just based on experience. Then we have the feelings, so if you feel pain or pleasure, you feel pain, happy, or calm. With thoughts, you would say thinking. So, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but with wisdom, let's start with, we look at it this way. So wisdom is just learning how to see things as they are. Learning how to see what's there. So we start with the stomach, rise, and fall. Just start with that. The other ones we can use to talk about the other three. So for effort, the second one, this is when you start to expand your awareness and become aware of everything else. With wisdom, we just understand that to be the basic idea of seeing things as they are. This is when we start to say, well, as they fall. But we need effort, which means we have to apply it to everything. It's not enough to sit and meditate on a single object because so many other things are going to get in your way. So this is when you feel pain or you feel happiness. Incorporating them into your practice means effort. This is how we accomplish effort, is to not get stuck on one thing, not get stuck on anything. So with effort, we look at everything inside of us. The third one, composure, it means then expanding it even beyond ourselves to our experiences of the world around us. So when you feel the heat or the cold in the room, or when you hear the noises in the room, or when you hear my speech, when you hear the birds or the crickets in the deer park. To meditate on them as well. When you hear, say, hear. When you feel, so feeling. And this guards, this is called composure because it prevents reaction to your experiences, whether it be attachment or whether it be aversion. It keeps you level-headed, it keeps you at peace, it keeps you free from wants and needs or aversions and frustrations and upset. Called guarding the senses. We're like a guard at the door. It's not that we don't want to see or hear or even feel pleasure or pain. It's that we don't want to get caught up in them and become controlled by them. Such that we're always seeking out certain experiences and always running away from other experiences. And the final one is renunciation. So renunciation has to do with our reactions to things. So this is part of the Dhamma. Beyond just our inner experience and the outer experience of hearing and seeing and so on, we have our reactions to all these things. And as I said, the idea is to be objective and not react. But it's important to be able to understand our reactions and understand why we react or what it's like to react. Because, you know, if you don't react to anything, it's pretty much saying enlightenment. But when we do react, this is where our practice begins in terms of renunciation. Our practice is about giving up our attachments, giving up our addictions, giving up our aversions, giving up our partiality, our bigotry, and our arrogance. And so on. And so we incorporate these things into our practice as well. When you like something as you like, and when you want something as you want. We're not trying to judge any of this. Again, the judgment is the problem in the first place, so we're just trying to study it. So we're not cling to our clinging, not get upset about our upset, not to get angry about our anger, not to be afraid of our fear. Focus on it, don't be afraid of it. When you're angry, you'll say angry, and you don't give it power over you. This is how we cultivate renunciation. So these four things, you can see how they very much fit into insight meditation practice. They're a good way of understanding and a good way of looking at the framework of the four satipatthana in order to get a sense of the quality of the practice of the four satipatthana, the required quality. Okay, I think I've talked just about long enough. If anybody wants to chat now. Part of teaching the Dhamma and studying the Dhamma is conversation. It should never just be one-sided. If you have any questions or you have any comments or concerns about what I say, if you just want to tell me I really can't teach worth beings, please feel free. I'm always happy to talk to people about their criticism as well. So thank you all for coming. And Happy New Year. Wishing you all wellness in the new year. May it bring new stuff. Oh, I forgot about the ambient sound. Right, it's too loud. Yeah, I knew that last time. Sorry, I wish you could have brought that up earlier. It's lower now. Except that also turns down. You know what I should do? I should do this. Wait. Ambient. No. those ones down because I want voice to be high. And so I think I can turn this back up to 100. Let me know if it's still too loud, but I think it should be quieter now.
For me, on my viewer, I turn off all the sounds except for voice. And so I don't hear anything but your voice. So it's good on my end.
I like the ambient. I thought the crickets were kind of a nice touch. It's just they're way too loud. If I keep my standard set up, they're too loud on the audio stream. So I just ruined that recording probably.
Oh. I forgot about the audio stream. I did link it to everybody who couldn't come in today.
Well, if you look, but your audio is not very good. It's not like my audio. My audio is direct from the source. The audio you're getting is through Vivox or something. It's not as good.
Yes.
Because I uploaded, I watched that video that you made, the recording that you made, Simon, and it was clipping as well. Distorted. That's, if it ever goes to red, if you see the thing above my head ever turn red, that's bad. That means it's clipping, it means it's reached its limit and it gets distorted. Okay. No red is good. It wasn't that bad, it was more the red than anything. Right, it's got a sound gate or something. I wonder why that is. Maybe I have to turn it up a little bit. Oh, I'm too quiet? Well, that's interesting. I wonder why that is. Because I wanted to be careful because I know Simon was getting red bars last time. Maybe I have to turn voice up in the volume. I don't know. So many variables. So no questions, no comments, no complaints, except a lot of people saying it was good, so that's good. Glad to have been of use. Okay. Well, then I'm going to say goodnight. Wishing you all, again, Happy New Year, and goodnight.